A quick question as well. How busy is it in Toronto, like just the streets?
To be honest, I haven't really been outside much, so I'm not like
No,
the
but
best indicator, but from what I've seen, it's relatively empty. Like
like
it's
even
more,
driving.
well, in my area, yeah. Like I've noticed a significant reduction whenever I go to the grocery store, or just like on King Street, in front of my place.
Yeah, okay.
So it is like people here are, cognizant of what they need to do. But they're actually like, oh man! So I went to FreshCo earlier,
Yeah.
and we were putting our stuff onto the conveyor belt to cash out and whatnot. This woman in front of us had like one thing, like one piece of produce. Had a stroller, like a baby stroller, finished paying, and then just stood at the end of the conveyor belt texting for a good like
Yeah.
2 to 3 minutes. I was like, yeah, what the fuck? Like, are you gonna move? I like tried to stall as much as I could, and then eventually I just had to start pushing forward to get her out of the way.
Yeah, that's
So
just whack.
dumb. Yeah, like where literally all the people in the grocery store congregate at the front, right? Like this bitch.
You should have gone like crazy person mode and just yelled out, "Social distancing!"
What's up, everybody? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Quarantined and in the house.
My man. The ISO Raj, how you feeling today?
Wow, we dropped the banger in the paint, did we?
You're no longer a banger in the paint, man. You're ISO.
Yeah.
ISO Raj.
Yeah, basically doing a lot of isolating right now for the last 10 days or so.
You're happy with yourself on that one, eh?
Yeah, I've been planning that
So
joke for
forced.
since the last episode.
I want to be upgraded.
You got something good?
No. You're supposed to get. You can't, like, name yourself. Supposed to have a nickname or something to go along with yourself, named by somebody else.
Okay, fine. We'll think of something good for you.
All right.
But until then, you're just a pick and pop guy. You don't like pick and pop, partner?
I'm more versatile than that.
No, you're not.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. You're no ISO player, that's for sure.
ISO you. You can't stop me.
No, I don't stop anybody.
That's very true.
Defense overrated, bruh.
All offense. You would not be on one of these lists.
I don't know about that. So today we're going to do something that I think it's a little bit overdue. We're looking at the top lineups from a couple of specific teams that we chose, a lot of historical teams. So we're going to be looking at the Lakers, the Celtics, the 76ers. We're going to be looking at these teams and literally the best players that they had. We're going to form the starting fives for each one. And yes, that means we're going to go with traditional lineups. None of this like running four centers out there kind of thing. We're not running an all-guard lineup. We're going traditional just because a lot of these teams have a lot of traditional players, right? Like a lot of these teams had peaks in the 80s when they had real centers, not in the 2020s. So it's a little bit more versatile than that. And let me just get us started. Josh, you got the number one pick with the Los Angeles Lakers. What you got?
So to be clear, this is based on all time, obviously, in terms of the positions that these guys played also on this specific team and how they played on this specific team. So even if you have a player that only played like 3 or 4 seasons for one specific team, it's not based on their career, it's just based on one team. So for the Lakers, obviously at point guard, you got to go with Magic Johnson. He played in 9 NBA Finals, won 5 of them. He was named Finals MVP 3 times. In the years prior to Magic's arrival, the purple and gold, they were 47 and 35. Not bad, but once they acquired him and the number one pick in 79 for Gail Goodrich, which is one of the craziest trades of all time, the Lakers won 60 games, and in Magic's rookie season, he obviously had the special game one of the series where he had almost a triple-double. And then in the last game, to win the finals, he obviously had a massive triple-double, scoring 42 points, having 15 rebounds and 7 assists in a game where he basically played every single position. So I don't think there's any controversy in going with Magic at the one for the Lakers. Number two, I got Kobe Bryant. this, I guess, could be somewhat controversial if you're 70 or 80 years old and saw Jerry West play?
No, it can't. Come on.
No.
Get out of here.
And Jerry West, I think, was a bit more of a point than he was a shooting guard.
I think the only word you can say is rings with Z's.
Yes. I mean, Kobe won 5 titles. He obviously has the most points scored in a season for the Lakers. Points per game, 35 points in that one season. Points scored in the game, 81. All-time leader in games played. All-time leader in minutes played. Field goals attempted, obviously. He might be all-time in that, the way that Kobe shot the ball. And he's the all-time Lakers leader in 3-point field goals made and attempted. And he's the all-time Lakers leader in points scored overall. So at the small forward position, this is one where you would think that, looking back, you would think James Worthy, right? But going a little bit further back, I put Elgin Baylor as my 3 in the all-time Lakers starting 5. He played 13 seasons. He was actually the franchise's all-time leader in points per game overall. You would think it would be Kobe. It was actually Elgin Baylor at 27.4 points per game. He's first in total rebounds at 11,463, and he's second by far, because Kobe shot so much, at 20,171 shots overall. First in minutes per game at 40 minutes a game, and rebounds per game actually at 13.5. So he's one of the most forgotten NBA players probably in the history of basketball.
Those are some
13.5
killer stats.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And he also scored 71 points in a game against future teammate Will Chamberlain.
Yeah, that's a bad dude.
He was a killer on the court. He never won a championship, but he made the finals a bunch of times, just like Jerry West as well.
Was he on the West teams?
He like was. He was on a couple of them with Will Chamberlain, but they always lost to Russell's Celtics.
Yes. They had a lot of issues with that Celtics team. I guess everyone else did, too.
Yeah, I mean, the Celtics won, I think, 10 championships back then, if I'm not mistaken. So the four position is one that could be argued potentially, but the Lakers never really had like an all-time four. But in looking back through their history throughout the 40 years, the only two guys that I found that had stats that sort of jumped out a little bit were obviously Pau Gasol and winning 2 titles with the Lakers, averaging 17 points and 10 rebounds. He's the guy I ultimately went with at the four position. And he probably should have been the 09-10 Finals MVP, especially after his big Game 7, in which Kobe shot, I think, 6 for 24 from the field in that last game. And overall, Pau Gasol was just better, I think, throughout that series. The other guy that you could potentially argue who had around the same amount of time with the Lakers was A.C. Green. He was really good on the boards, obviously, in those years with Magic and Kareem. He was the 4 for that team. A lot of people don't remember him, obviously, outside of him, you know, keeping his virginity for 33 years at a time where Magic Johnson had a bunch of sex parties, but, you know, to each their own. He obviously won 3 titles as a Laker, and he's top 10 in the rankings for offensive, defensive, and total rebounds in franchise history. And he put up decent numbers. He averaged 15 points, 9 boards, 94, and overall, I think he was at around 11 and 8. So ultimately, I went with Pau Gasol there, but, you know, A.C. Green does have some longevity there and playing more years for the Lakers. And
was AC Green like the 3rd or 4th option on that team? He must have been, right?
He was basically the garbage man. Remember Kurt Rambis, they sort of played the same type of role, except AC Green was a bit more offensively gifted, I guess you could say. Even though he wasn't that good, he could hit at like a 15-18 foot shot, so he would provide some spacing for Kareem and Magic. But ultimately, like, he was just a guy that would set screens and just do a lot of the dirty work. Sort of like, you know, the Davis brothers for Indiana going back in, you know, the 2000s. And then the center position, I think, is the big one that we can talk about. So I went with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at center over Shaq. Just because, again, going back to longevity. In this case, I chose Kareem because he played 14 years overall. He averaged 22 points per game. He averaged over 20 points per game in 11 of those seasons. He obviously won 5 titles with the Lakers. He had 3 MVPs, 6 overall in the 4 years. In 4 years, actually. So 3 MVPs in 4 years in the 80s. And then during his 14 seasons in LA, he put up, you know, the 22 points, obviously. He ranks first in offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds, and blocks. And he ranks second in games and minutes played. and he's the franchise's third leading scorer. So would you guys take Shaq over Kareem?
No, I think I would take Kareem just because he's done it for a longer period. Shaq's obviously, I think, the more dominant player if I had one season, just because he was, like, when he was unguardable and he was a force. But what Kareem did with the Lakers, I think, is just a bigger display of work compared to Shaq.
How many MVPs did Kareem have?
Overall, he had 6, I believe.
And do you remember how many Shaq had with the Lakers? Sorry.
I think Shaq only had one.
Yeah, I think so. One or two, wasn't it?
I think it was only one.
It was only one?
Yeah, because Shaq always talks about that, how, you know, going back in time, he's like, you know, a bunch of these guys had like one specific season where potentially they had better numbers than him, or if you go back to the Nash years, like Shaq is always on that Nash shouldn't have won those MVPs. But, you know, Shaq missed a bunch of games back then too.
Dr. O'Neal,
do you want to hold the feet?
Don't touch the toms. Right. What seems to be your overriding concern today? What is your issue? What would you like to get off your chest?
It was this little good-looking David Beckham little guy running around like a gnat, just passing the ball to people and doing this and doing that. He scored every now and then, but he would always beat me out in the MVP voting. And I'm averaging 28-15 without the free throws. I'm going to the finals every year.
Do you not feel that Steve Nash deserved the award at all? There's not a part of you that says, yes, Steve Nash deserved the award for the following reasons.
Maybe once, but not twice over the diesel. Twice, 2 times in a row. He got 2, I got 1, Kobe got 1. Something wrong with that picture. Whatever camera you're using, throw it away. Get a new camera.
Anything else you need to get off your chest at this point?
No, I'm just, I'm mad I wasn't on Dream Team 1. Mm-hmm. I'm mad they started the Hacker Shack.
Are you really? Because you've always said that just proves that they're losers or they don't know how to play the game.
That is true, but I wasn't born with the gifts that Reggie and Isaiah and D. Scott were born with. I wasn't born with the shooting touch. I was born with the
booty. So are you bitter about that as well?
Yeah, I'm bitter about that. I'm mad about Pat Riley used to practice me 5 hours a day. I'm mad Phil Jackson used to come in with something called sage that smelled like weed to me. Not that I know what weed smells like. He used to come in every day and meditate. I'm mad about a lot of things.
Yeah, I think at their peak, I might actually take Shaq over Kareem, but during their time with the Lakers, it had to be Kareem, right? 3 MVPs obviously was a lot longer. Shaq always felt like he could have done a bit more. Like, as blasphemous as that sounds to say, I always felt like Shaq left something on the table every time, right? Like, remember when he said that he got hurt on company time, so he was going to have surgery on company time?
Yeah.
A lot of little things like that where you know that he can do just a bit more and still be, like, the dominant player, but he just refused to do it.
Yeah, I think with Shaq as well, too, like, had he played for the Lakers for 9 or 10 years, I think we would have seen more championships, more dominating stats, like a huge force. And the fact that he was on the Lakers for, I believe, 6 years?
Eight.
And obviously they had a three-peat, and he was a dominant player while he was there. But I think if his body of work was a bit longer, like more than 10, probably 11, 12, 13 years with one team, that's where you really can see how effective he was and look at his stats on the Lakers.
You know, one interesting stat I found while researching this, in the 2000 playoffs, obviously a lot of people claim that Shaq was a little bit out of shape, but he actually logged 1,000 playoff minutes, and that feat has only been accomplished by six times overall in 59 years. And surprisingly, Kobe was not one of those guys that logged that many minutes in the playoffs, which was sort of surprising for me.
Is LeBron?
That I'm not sure of. I would guess so, with how much LeBron played in that 1 year, especially when Kyrie and Kevin Love was out. But just the fact that Shaq reached that mark in the playoffs without getting injured or just tiring out was pretty impressive.
Yeah, Shaq, it's so weird. Like, he always seems like he was overweight, but he might have just been one of those guys that, like, he's got that type of body, right? He'll never have like a what he calls like a salad eater body.
I don't know though, because like in college and his first couple of years in Orlando, he was pretty in pretty good shape.
Yeah, but you know that was before he got like big money.
Yeah, before money he changes went to, before you, he went Hollywood.
Yeah, literally Hollywood. As soon as he got to LA, man, that's when you saw real Shaq come out, like the entertainer Shaq.
Yeah, he stopped working out as much, and he's just all around the town doing Shaq things.
Yeah. Where did you have Wilt on your list?
Wilt, I had number 3 in terms of the center position. So he played 5 seasons for the Lakers. And before he got there, they were averaging 115.6 points against. And then once he joined the team, it was 7 points per 100 possession less. So he obviously totally changed how the Lakers were playing back then. And the Lakers won the first championship, and Wilt set a couple NBA records along the way in that one season where he did win the title with the Lakers. They set a record for consecutive wins at 33, which I think is still the record right now. Yep. And then during the regular season, they obviously won 69 games that year, and he won his first ever MVP trophy of the finals in that same season as well. So in 72-73, that was the last season for Chamberlain. But in the last season, he averaged, in terms of his field goal percentage, the highest field goal percentage ever recorded, which is probably going to be broken this year if the season does continue, by Mitchell Robinson. But his record is currently 72.7% in terms of overall field goal percentage in a season.
I mean, that's pretty good.
He was all right.
Yeah, he's not bad. Do his 20,000 women also count somewhere?
I think it's 50, isn't it?
God knows. It might be 100 for all we know. All right, not bad.
Just one other tidbit, though, on the Lakers. One player that I found that is also on my honorable mention list, Gail Goodrich. He averaged 25.9 nice. Points per game in 71-72 when they won 69 games. He was 10th overall in minutes played, 9th in field goals made, 7th in field goals attempted. And he was a beast. Like, in the seasons that he played for the Lakers, he was averaging 18-plus points per game consistently on those teams. So, another player sort of lost in history along the same lines as Elgin Baylor.
Nice, Paul. Where do you have Derek Fisher on your list?
Hey, one of the greatest role players of all time, right?
Yeah, also one of the bigger snakes of all time.
Indeed.
All right, let's move on. Raj, you got the Boston Celtics. Nice rivalry there. What you got?
Yeah, so obviously one of the more storied franchises in the NBA. So when I was going through this list, I had to go back in the history books and see some of the greats that have played this game. And I honestly didn't have as much trouble as Josh. Maybe I may have overlooked a few players. But I think the top five is almost undisputable. So... number one at center, Bill Russell, 11-time NBA champion. He played his entire career with the Boston Celtics. He played 13 career seasons, 11-time NBA champion. He won the MVP 5 times. He was an All-Star 12 times. He was, interestingly enough, he was 3-time All-NBA first team, 8-time All-NBA second team. One of the best players probably to ever play the game. And I think the Bill Russell Award, the NBA Finals trophy is named after him. So rightfully so, he's my center. I don't think there's any disputing his talent and his impact on the game and his role for the Celtics. At power forward, I have Kevin McHale. Obviously, he played... A lot later than Bill Russell, but he's in his 13-year career with the Celtics. He won an NBA championship 3 times. He was a defensive and offensive player. Honestly, it was an easy pick. And then I think small forward, I think you guys can guess who this one was.
Wheelchair Paul Pierce. No, I'm kidding.
Hell yeah. Oh, we all know who it is. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's Larry Bird.
The poor man's Luka Doncic.
Wow. Yeah. Jesus.
Interestingly enough, all the 3 players that I have named have played their entire career with the Celtics, and all three of them have played exactly 13 seasons. Which was very interesting. Obviously, Larry Bird, one of the best players in NBA history. Three-time NBA champion, two-times finals MVP, three-time MVP, regular season MVP, 12-time All-Star. The list goes on and on.
Yeah, and both those guys could have, you know, if they played in today's day and age, they would have played like 18 to 20 seasons. But both those guys in different playoff runs. I know Kevin McHale broke his foot and then asked to get like a same type of shot as they give Horford. I think it's like a cortisone shot or something like that. I don't even know what it was. But they basically numbed his foot in order for him to play the rest of the playoffs. And that totally derailed his career. They're saying that now he can barely even walk. And then Larry Bird also had like major back issues back in, the, I think it was the 90s season. And he came back for, I think, 1 year where he was somewhat healthy. And then his back just sort of gave out. So, and those guys were playing through insane injuries back then. And if you think, you know, today's day and age, they would have played like 68 to 72 games. And they probably had a really long careers instead of it being cut short by their stubbornness.
Hold on. Do we remember why Larry Bird had a bad back? Do you guys remember the story?
Something to do with a bar and a lot of drinking.
No, it wasn't. This guy wanted to redo his driveway in Indiana and was too cheap to pay anyone to do it. So he hurt his back during the offseason redoing his driveway. Legit.
Like, wow.
Yeah. All because he was too cheap. It's freaking amazing.
Yeah, just to maintain his rep, I'm going to go with the had too many drinks at a bar story.
He got in some bar fights, though. I mean, a lot of the stories have been told about him, but he didn't take any shit.
Yeah, so continuing my list, these are players that I had to go way back. These are players that I haven't seen any footage of or barely heard their name, but now looking back at just their career and their statistics and how they're regarded in NBA circles. So for point guard, I have Bob Cousy. He was a six-time NBA champion. He played most of his career with the Boston Celtics. He also played 13 seasons with the Celtics, but he ended up returning to play for the Cincinnati Royals for 1 year. So that ruined the perfect streak of players that played 13 seasons only with the Celtics. But yeah, six-time NBA champion. He won a regular season MVP. In all 13 years of the regular season, he was an All-Star, and he was 10-time All-NBA first team, which I think is outrageous. And
just goes to show how watered down the league was back. This guy shot 37.5% from the field overall in his career. I know it was a different time back then, obviously, but and the fact that like when you watch his videos, like I've seen a couple of them, he's never dribbled with his left hand in his life. It's disgusting. He crosses over from right to right.
Are you saying you have a better handle than Bob Cousy?
I mean, our friend Kevin, who also only dribbles with his right hand, has a better handle than Bob Cousy.
The disrespect.
Shout out to Kevin.
And Bob Cousy.
Bob Cousy. But you can't deny his stats, and I really struggled to find another Celtic point guard that would have probably had the same impact on his career as Bob Cousy did.
Just to bring up another name, like JoJo White, he won two NBA titles, one NBA Finals MVP, surprisingly, which is something that just, you know, jumps out of the page at you. He's a seven-time All-Star, two-time All-NBA second team, and his number was retired by the Celtics, just like Cousy's was. But at least JoJo White's game was watchable. So, I mean, I agree with you that Cousy's number one, but
this guy...
Man, ugh, those highlights, they're brutal. Like, once we're done this podcast, everyone go watch Bob Cousy highlights for 30 seconds or as much as you can stomach, and you can just see how disgusting the league was back then.
This guy's so rude. Raj, who's your two guard?
Yeah, so I think Josh is going to love this. This one, I actually had a more modern player that I was about to put in my starting lineup, but then again, pardon me?
Ricky Davis.
Yes, exactly.
Great Paul.
Yeah, I was going to go with Tony Allen or something, but I'm going to go with John Havlicek. His career was in line with Bob Cousy's. He played a little after him, but as a career, his accomplishments are just, again, unmatched. Eight-time NBA champion, four-time All-NBA first team. He's a 13-time All-Star. He won Finals MVP. And also, defensively, he was a five-time All-NBA first teamer. So, really can't dispute him deserving second place. Because I couldn't watch any of these players, because none of them really played before I was even born, I have to give some love to a few players that at least I recognize their names. Paul Pierce, obviously. Yeah, Paul
That's
Pierce
incredible.
obviously is like he played his entire career with or most of his career, I should say, with the Boston Celtics. But again, he's no match to Larry Bird. And obviously, Kevin Garnett had 2 good years as a power forward, but that's pale in comparison to Kevin McHale. So that's about it. I think the Celtics lineup is really, if you were watching NBA between the 1955 and 1995, you'd recognize all those names, and I don't think you would dispute any of the top five greatest Celtic players.
Yo, Josh, would you put Kevin Garnett ahead of McHale?
No, I mean, I love KG. He's my favorite player of all time, obviously. But McHale, again, going back to longevity, he played 13 seasons with Boston. KG only played, I think it was 5 years overall. I mean, KG was a five-time All-Star with Boston. He won an NBA championship, won Defensive Player of the Year. But ultimately, I mean, Kevin McHale had a bunch of really great years with Boston, obviously. And, you know, if you listen to Charles Barkley tell it, he's the best player of all time. Or the best
That's
player that
power
Charles Barkley's
forward.
played against. Sorry.
The hardest player he's ever had to cover is what
He
Barkley
said that
said.
he's the best player he's ever played against. I think that's just a slight to MJ, though.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe because MJ keeps beating him on the golf course.
Yeah. And the other guy that sort of jumped off the page at me was Tommy Heinsohn. He won 8 NBA titles. He's a six-time All-Star, four-time All-NBA second team, Rookie of the Year, and obviously his number's retired. And he's become one of the greatest color commentators of all time, if you just like to be entertained by homers.
I think that's why everyone knows who Tommy Heinsohn is.
The fact that he had such a great playing career, nobody really knows about that.
It doesn't matter. He's just a crazy old man on the mic now.
It's true.
Shouts to Tommy.
Walter McCarty.
I'll tell you, I took a look at Baines in the shower. He looks like all of Australia. He is really put together.
Also, shouts to Walter McCarty. All right, moving on. I drew the Portland Trailblazers. More, I guess, contemporary players, if you really think about it. We're going to start off with the five. You got your boy, Josh. Bill Walton.
Yes, the greatest color commentator of all time.
This is the day that we thank Michelangelo. Michelangelo, this is the day he died in 1564. Oh my gosh. Michelangelo, thank you so much.
There you go. 77 Finals MVP. He obviously brought Portland their only championship. 78 MVP. His career was shortened because of a lot of injuries that he's had, but 17.1 points per game, 13.5 rebounds, 2.6 blocks. So this guy was a beast in the paint. In a time that, the paint was really dominated by a few of like the major players, right? You had Kareem and Wilt in the 70s, but after those guys, it was all Walton.
Yeah, Walton was basically Jokic if Jokic wasn't like 350 pounds. So
Yeah, if
Walton
Jokic
is the
was like showed
in-shape
up in shape.
Jokic.
Yeah. With a fro.
Yes. And a great headband, too.
Yeah, so picture Will Ferrell in semi-pro, but good. Like, really good. And you got Bill Walton. But picture Will Ferrell. At the four, I got everyone's favorite lazy runner, LaMarcus Aldridge. 19.4 points, 8.4 rebounds. This guy is one of the beacons of consistency. For like any player in the league, consistently just brings it. He's always like in the mid to high 50s field goal percentage, very efficient shooter, efficient player, good defensively, not the best, but he's good. He's reliable. And he spent, let me check, how long did LaMarcus Aldridge spend in Portland?
My guess is 8 years.
9 seasons. Yeah. So, LaMarcus Aldridge, man, he's like, he's probably the best power forward that they had. At the 3, I'm going with Clyde the Glide Drexler. 20.8 points per game, 6.2 rebounds. No,
you can't do
You're
that.
You're crazy.
You can't do that.
Who?
You're moving over positions, man. Drexler played the 2.
No.
Yes, sir.
No.
He did.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, man.
This is why I was going to bring up, like, before the podcast, we were talking, what's the toughest position to fill of these 6 teams? And for me, it was Portland, a small forward. Because there's not a lot of guys there that really made a huge impact for
Jerome
more than
Kersey,
5 seasons.
Let's go. Jerome Kersey, you got upgraded, my man. Enjoy.
I had Scottie Pippen, actually.
No, why?
He played 4 seasons there, and they had their most successful run since the Walton days with him in the fold, and they probably should have won the championship that year if it wasn't for that fourth quarter in L.A. where, you know, in the end, Kobe threw that alley-oop to Shaq, and they won the Game 7 against Portland. That team was stacked.
You mean Scottie choked?
I mean, he had a couple bad moments in that game.
Nah, man. I'm going Jerome Kersey. He was there for 9 years. Highest season average was like 20 points per game. I don't know, man. Yo, that really threw me off. I always thought that Drexler was a 3.
No, Drexler was a 2.
Yeah, now you say it. That's really throwing me off. Okay, so at the 2, would you have Drexler or Brandon Roy?
Drexler, for sure.
Really?
Roy was what could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Roy could have definitely surpassed him within a couple of years if he was able to stay healthy, because he was just a monster, but... Overall, I think Drexler, you could make the case that he's the best Blazer of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Once again, longevity, right? Like, he was consistently great in the seasons that he was there, and then he got traded to Houston, where he was still great.
Still great. I don't know if he was still great in Houston, but he was great in Portland.
No, he was great in Houston, too. It's just people remember him less fondly because Jordan always destroyed him in the playoffs. But Jordan destroyed everybody in the playoffs. You're going to downgrade Gary Payton and Sean Kemp, too, and all the guy like John Stockton, Karl Malone. It's not their fault. MJ was just better.
You ask Isaiah Thomas, and he'll tell you Karl Malone was Utah's downfall. How about that? All right, so Drexler... 12 seasons in Portland, 20.8 points. You're looking at 6.2 rebounds, 5.7 assists. He basically did everything for this team. He carried them for 12 seasons, right? Like you said, got to the finals with the Bulls a couple of times. Once, I think?
With Houston?
No, with Portland.
Oh, with Portland, it was once, I believe.
They got once, right?
Yeah, they played MJ.
Yeah, and you're right. MJ just did his thing on them, but Drexler at the 2. And then at the 1, you got video game Dame, no doubt. We all know it. We all know Dame's resume. Do I really need to go through this? One of the best point guards in the league right now, multiple game-winning shots in the playoffs, obviously carries a load for his team right now, and basically since he came into the league, he was carrying that team. I don't really know what else to say about Dame. Everyone knows his resume. There's no point in going through this.
Yeah, I like your list. I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head, and especially if you move Drexler at the 3, at the 2, that the big weakness in the team is they never really had a 3, which is funny because even now as their roster in 2020, they're also missing that key wing player.
That's true.
Yeah, I think the only position you could potentially argue is if you go back in time and you look at what Maurice Lucas did for the team. He played power forward for the Blazers during the Walton years, and he was huge in the series, or I guess the playoffs, throughout, I think it's the 77 season. He averaged 20 points and 11 rebounds, and, you know, during the 3-year run, he was big for that team, obviously, as their second guy, you know, in the paint. And plus, I just don't like LaMarcus, so I would put Lucas over either Lucas or Sheed. I like Sheed, too.
Yeah, I had Sheed on my list as an honorable mention. Obviously, you got he doesn't qualify, but Arvydas Sabonis is one of the best Blazers during his peak because he came in late as hell.
Yeah, he was my backup center on the list.
Yeah. Terry Porter, backup point guard.
Yep.
Shouts to CJ McCollum, probably, I guess at this point, the third best shooting guard that they've had.
I think ultimately, the run that Dame's on, he's probably going to be considered the best Blazer of all time once it's all said and done.
Yeah. Pretty much. I mean... If he gets anywhere close to the finals, then easily the best Blazer of all time.
Well, he's already made a conference final, so I think that's enough.
Yeah, exactly. And he's done it for so long, and it looks like he has another 3 years left on his contract, and I can see that team turning it around next year and at least making the playoffs. So that's a lot of consecutive years of hitting big shots, making the playoffs, or not consecutive, but a lot of years of making the playoffs and making your team relevant.
Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. All right. Well, moving on, Josh, you drew the Philadelphia 76ers.
So at the point guard position, I had to go a little bit further back in time. At first, I thought it was going to be Maurice Cheeks based on how Philadelphia 76ers fans talk him up. But going even further back than that, a player named Hal Greer averaged 22 points per game to lead the Sixers to an NBA championship in 67, 10-time All-Star, All-Star Game MVP. He actually set the record for most points scored in a quarter at 19 during an All-Star game, which is a little-known fact, obviously. 7-time All-NBA second team, and he scored 21,586 points overall, and he's 40th all-time in NBA history. So a bit of a shocker there. I was sort of surprised by that. I thought for sure Maurice Lucas would be... Maurice Cheeks would be number one on the point guard depth chart, but I have Hal Greer there. And then second, for the shooting guard position, I have Allen Iverson, obviously, considered maybe the greatest Sixer of all time.
Whoa. You're putting AI at the two?
During AI's prime, Eric Snow was the point guard. He was.
Really?
Yes.
Really? In 2000? Or 01? Yeah, 2000.
Yeah, when they made the finals, Eric Snow was the point guard.
I don't know, man.
He played the majority of his minutes at shooting guard.
I don't know, Josh.
Larry Brown said that Allen Iverson was their point guard.
Eric Snow brought the ball up.
Get out of here. No, he didn't. Allen Iverson did everything offensively for that team. You know this.
Is Kobe a point guard?
No.
No, but Kobe didn't bring up the ball that as much as AI did.
AI Come played on, shooting man. Guard. Let's be honest here.
No, he played point guard.
No, we didn't. You guys are crazy.
Nah, dude. You check anywhere, Allen Iverson is listed more as a point guard than a shooting
Even
guard.
Even on Denver, he wasn't a point guard there.
Who was? J.R. Smith?
Come on. J.R. Smith came off the bench, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
They were playing...
Denver only had
Iverson. Carter. You're playing Carter a point guard a lot.
Dude, no. Sorry, man.
I'm telling you, man, with the
I'll
Sixers,
let you have it.
I would. If you look up the stats, AI played the shooting guard position a lot more than he played point guard. And the reason why he did that is because he was getting tired out bringing the ball up against pressure, so they had Eric Snow bring it up instead, or Aaron McKee.
I'll allow it, but I don't like it.
You consider AI to be a point guard?
No, I just consider him what Larry Brown had him playing. Larry Brown had him as a point guard.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did. Oh. All right, whatever.
Even Kevin Ollie was bringing the ball up with AI. I mean, AI would be the first pass in the offense, obviously. He'd handle it from, like, you know, second 18 on the shot clock down, but he didn't really bring the ball up that much as part of the starting lineup anyway.
Whatever you say, Josh.
All right, moving whatever on. You say. So in 2001, he averaged 31 points per game and 2.5 steals en route to winning his first MVP award, first and only, I believe. Rookie of the Year, one-time MVP, obviously, six-time All-Star, and seven-time All-NBA. I don't think it's in dispute that he obviously is the best shooting guard of all time, and arguably the best Sixer of all time. There's a point of contention there, I think, in going up against the next guy, which is Julius Erving at the small forward position, who revolutionized the dunk, obviously, and how small forwards play, especially in today's day and age. He only played 11 seasons, but he was an all-star all 11 seasons. He was the MVP in 1981. He averaged 25-8-4. He won one NBA championship. At power forward, I have Charles Barkley. He only played, I think, six seasons for Philly. But he was obviously an all-star in all six. He actually has the record for a few different things. So he has the most offensive rebounds in a half at 13, most offensive rebounds in a quarter at 11, and most free throws attempted in a seven-game series, which was interesting. He had 100 overall in the 1986 series against the Bucks.
And how bad was he shooting, though? Like, if you're going to foul a guy 50 times in a series, that's what? Seven a game?
Yeah, like seven or more, right? So,
yeah, I mean, and the weirdest thing is in the same series, he's actually averaged the most turnovers in a seven-game series in the exact same series against the Bucks at 37, which is pretty amazing. And then at the center position, I have Moses Malone. So he won MVP in 79 and 82 with Houston. Then he got traded to the 76ers, where he won his second consecutive MVP in 83. And he led the Sixers to 65 wins. And then he basically rampaged through the playoffs. They went 12-1. And during that run, a reporter asked him how the team would do. And Moses Malone wasn't really known for being a talker. And he gave a three-word response. He said, faux, 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 which is something that he's become, you know, synonymous for. And that he basically said they're going to sweep the playoffs, but they ended up losing the one game. And then in his four seasons for the Sixers, he basically accomplished everything. He had 24 points per game, 13 rebounds, and then he had four straight All-Star appearances. So do you guys have any points of contention with my starting five?
Would you... The issue would be whether you have Moses Malone or Wilt Chamberlain at the five, right?
Yeah, that was my only point of contention, really, was, you know, Chamberlain technically only played three seasons with Philadelphia. He actually played 3 years with the Philadelphia Warriors. He started his career with them, and then they moved on to San Francisco and played three seasons there. And during his first stint with the Philadelphia Warriors, he had a 50-point average throughout the course of a regular season. And he obviously had that 100-point game. So his stats were just insane back then. But
50 points!
He played 48-plus minutes a game in that season, too. There's a couple overtime games where he played extra minutes, so he actually averaged more than 48 minutes a game in that one regular season, which is just insanity.
And we go back to his 50,000 number.
Yeah, for sure. He was busy back then. He basically got no sleep and still somehow played more than 48 minutes a game, which is very impressive.
Yeah. So, what if you put Moses at the four and then Wilt at the five?
That's cheating.
Is it?
Moses Malone never played the four, because back then you had like the traditional power forward who didn't really shoot at all, but it was like the garbage man back then.
Yeah, that's true. But on Basketball Reference, he is listed as a center and power forward.
Yeah, I suppose. That's probably in his later years, but I don't know. I mean, at the same time, Chamberlain did win MVP awards in all three of his 76ers years, and he averaged 27, 24, and 7 assists a game and won championship. So his numbers are just
insane. Ugh.
Is Will Chamberlain the best athlete of all time?
Other than LeBron, yeah, maybe.
He might be a better athlete than LeBron. Like, he used to do like triathlons and stuff and win those too. Like, he was just a freak.
Yeah, but LeBron isn't allowed to do those things either, right?
True.
Like, it's a different time now, because before, like, athletes could do whatever they wanted before.
But LeBron hasn't banged 50,000 chicks either. Or maybe he has.
That you know of.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. All right, any special like shout-outs?
Actually, one.
Doug Collins?
So Billy Cunningham, who was nicknamed the Kangaroo Kid. I'm not exactly sure why, but it's a pretty cool nickname. he accumulated 21 points, 10 rebounds across 11 seasons in the NBA and ABA, and he won a title with the 76ers in 67. And a fact you may not know is after he retired as a player, he took the reins in Philadelphia as the coach, and he became the quickest coach to 200 and then 300 wins in league history. And then he stewarded the franchise to another title in 83. And overall, his coaching record is second in terms of percentage only to Phil Jackson at 454 wins and 196 losses. So in terms of the players we've talked about who have sort of been lost through history, he's been a coach that's been lost through history with an absolutely insane record as a head coach.
Yeah, it's badass.
Yeah.
That's why I know his name. I definitely don't know his name as a player, but as a coach, I've heard it here and there.
And he's got one of the cooler nicknames of all time that nobody's really heard of.
You can say it again.
The Kangaroo Kid.
There you go. Wonderful. I like the emphasis. All right, Raj, you drew. This is a little homer pick because this team is definitely not as historic at all, but you gotta give the fans what they want. The Toronto Raptors.
Oh, we are historic, baby. Come on.
Yeah, prehistoric.
Ooh, that was a good one. You planted that one, eh? Talking about this team, complete opposite is the Celtics. The Celtics were a team that you really had to go in the history books. This Toronto franchise didn't exist before 1995. So all these players are more recent. These are all players that I've seen grown up, really watching. But I think the list, to be honest, is really not disputable. I'm going to start off with the point guard position. There have been some good point guards, but none better than Kyle Lowry, an NBA champion, six-time All-Star, all with the Raptors. He has made an All-NBA team. That was in 2016. That was the third team All-NBA team. Overall, I think he's had a better career than the other Raptors point guards, particularly Jose Calderon. He really established himself coming from, I believe it was Houston. He was traded from Houston to the Raptors. And since that trade, he's really established himself as one of the better point guards in the last 8 years. And just consistency and good tenacity on the defensive end. And I think he's one of the best Raptors, period. And definitely the Raptors' best point guard.
Oh, you can say it, man. He's the best Raptor of all time.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I would say so. The shooting guard that played many of his seasons, I believe 9 seasons beside him, was DeMar DeRozan. And even though Josh had a lot of misery, I think that being said, he brought the team from pretty much the basement of the Eastern Conference all the way for several years, and he was a 4-time All-Star. He made an All-NBA second team and an All-NBA third team. And overall, I think he did it consistently for a Raptors team that really had no identity, and he created the platform that helped them springboard into their NBA championship last year.
So you know, if somebody's just listening to this a few seconds into what you just said, they would think you're talking about Vince Carter.
Yeah, well, they would think that, but I think DeMar DeRozan, in my opinion, has done more on the court for the Raptors than Vince Carter has. Yeah.
Hard disagree. What do you think, Peter?
They're both good. I like Vince more, but DeMar does have that longevity.
Like what? How many years do you think that DeMar DeRozan has played in the playoffs?
How many times has DeMar DeRozan choked in the playoffs? Probably the exact same amount.
A lot. Yeah, like definitely. I'm not disputing that. But
yeah, he still brought them there, though. Mm. Like, DeMar literally brought your team out of what you've said is purgatory.
Yeah, and he put them on the treadmill until Kawhi saved them.
Yeah, but a treadmill is better than purgatory, no?
I suppose. I was pretty disappointed during that time frame that the tickets went up as much as they did. So, I mean, at least we got some playoff games.
Yeah.
But still, Vince Carter is definitely the number one shooting guard for the Raptors.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I would put Vince there too, but
No.
I can see the argument for DeMar.
Like Vince Carter overall as a player, for sure, I'm not disputing that, but for what he did for the Raptors, I think DeMar DeRozan did more on the court for the Raptors. Vince Carter obviously established them as a brand, and obviously winning the dunk contest was huge, but he played, I believe, 4 years, 6 years for the Raptors, and he brought them to the playoffs how many times? Twice. And I think even in that situation, like, he's also known for, like, in the according to the Raptors fans, as someone who almost quit on his team until he was brought back as a hero because I guess the whole story came out with how the management was handling that situation and how he really didn't want to leave. But Vince Carter was always like a what if story, kind of like obviously to a lesser degree than Brandon Roy, but his name and his brand were created here, but he didn't have most of his success for the Raptors.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. This is my least favorite argument of all time, and I feel like I need to take a shower after this in defending Vince Carter. But
yeah, let's move on. We know the arguments.
I hate them both.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this one
let's put Alvin Williams there instead.
Jesus. Put Mo Pete on. Come on.
Yeah, that's honorable mention, but he's not of the same quality. Easy pick for a small forward. This just shows how young the Raptors franchise is, but Kawhi Leonard has been the Raptors' greatest small forward in his 1 year, brought them an NBA championship, was a beast on both the offensive and defensive end, the only reason they really won. So easy small forward pick. And then power forward, I think this is the debate when you said Kyle Lowry is the greatest Raptor. I think in the power forward position, I would go with Chris Bosh. I think Chris Bosh probably is in that conversation with Kyle Lowry as the best player. Although he didn't have the same level of success, he was a consistently good player with his 7 years with the Raptors. During that time, he was an all-star four times. He was an all-NBA second team. He made the first all-rookie team. Even though he wasn't like a big playoff beast because the team was poor, I think he still made them relevant and watchable.
Yeah.
Agree.
I have no arguments there. Bosh was a monster.
Yeah. Would Bosh be a better player than Kyle Lowry is in the greatest Raptor of all time?
I think so, because Lowry won. Like, if the Raptors didn't have that championship, I would say Bosh.
Yeah.
But the championship just trumps everything.
Yeah, I agree. But it's close, I think. Yeah, and then this is one that I really struggled with, the center position. That's why I put it for last.
Oh, man. All right, go ahead.
Jesus, Josh.
Yeah, like I really, like, I don't know who you would want to put, but the only real traditional center that I really remember playing for the Raptors and having an impact is JV.
Thank you. I thought you were going to say Antonio Davis for a second there.
I was going to say AD.
He played more of the four.
Big dog. Antonio Davis?
No, yeah. Davis played the five.
Oh, he did?
Davis was definitely a five. He was just short. He was like 6'9".
Davis played the four in Indiana because they had Rick Smits, but for the Raptors, he played the five, and then Oakley played next to him.
I see. But yeah, I would go with JV. A kind of forgotten piece for the Raptors' success with DeRozan, but... Yeah, he was a good player. He was young. He's still very young, still active. And the Raptors really haven't had a dominant force inside. But JV, I would say, is the best Raptors center of all time.
Yeah, as long as you don't need him getting any tips, you're pretty much good to go.
Ugh, come on, man. So unnecessary.
No, it's true, though. JV has never... Like, he's one of those guys who you always thought could do a little bit more and, like, live up to a bit more of his potential, but has never got there.
JV was a monster in the playoffs, though, in all those years. I mean, he was the one guy that consistently showed up and gave you double-doubles, and you knew what he was going to give you every single night.
Empty stats.
No.
Empty stats. I'm sorry. If you're going to say DeMar DeRozan didn't show up and didn't bring anything to the playoffs, JV didn't do much more.
Yo, check his stats, bro. There's no meaningless stats in the playoffs.
Check the dubs. They're non-existent.
Well, maybe if they featured him more, they would have won more games instead of DeRozan hogging the ball all the time.
Gotta blame the coach, don't you?
Don't get me started on him. He's not going to be in that discussion of greatest Raptors coach of all time.
Who's the greatest Raptors coach of all time?
Come on, Nick Doctor, come on.
Nick Doctor. Wow, I definitely set that one up.
He's been upgraded. Okay. Soon enough, he's going to be a surgeon.
Wow. Okay, not bad.
It's not even a discussion. Come on.
Yeah, it's actually not. Only because JV was there for so long.
Shout out Lenny Wilkins. So.
Shout out Hakeem Olajuwon. One season with the Raptors.
Yeah, the forgotten season.
All right, any honorable mentions that we've got here?
No, not really. I think got it pretty down.
Who would be your backup point guard on this team? That's my only point of contention with this Raptors squad.
The Raptors have had good point guards. You had the TJ Ford / Jose Calderon combination for a while.
I would say Jose.
Alvin Williams before that. Muggsy Bogues.
Damian Stoudemire.
Yeah. Damian Stoudemire would have been nice. Yeah. Any of those guys. I mean, Jose had the best assist to turnover ratio ever on the Raptors. Remember that?
I remember the days where like there was like 3-on-2 fast break. Jose would bring the ball up and he wouldn't, you know, immediately outlet or make the right pass, and then he'd just back it out and the Raptors would run their 24-second offense under Kevin O'Neal. It was so
brutal. Yeah. Do you remember that one year that he was up for All-Star discussion and Gilbert Arenas started writing a blog about how ridiculous that was?
I don't remember that, but that sounds like Gilbert.
Like, he was the first NBA player to get a blog. I think it was actually on NBA.com at the time in like 07 or 08. And it was because Jose Calderon had like a 10-to-1 assist to turnover ratio and was in All-Star discussion. And Gilbert Arenas just went, yo, are you serious? Are you people actually serious about this?
Yeah. Gilbert Arenas had a lot of firsts. I mean, he was the first player to bring a gun in the locker room too. So good for him.
That you know of.
Yeah, true. Well, I guess
you don't know what
I guess
in
to
the
70s pull it out.
Yeah. To flex on somebody with it.
Yeah.
All right. I'm taking out the last team here. We got ourselves the Houston Rockets. So obviously at the five, we're going with the best Houston Rockets player of all time. Multiple-time champion, Hakeem Olajuwon. 17 seasons, 22.5 points per game, 8 boards, 3.2 blocks, multiple games with quadruple doubles. This guy was just a beast. There's no contention at the five, right?
No, honorable but mention. At the same time, like, Houston's probably had the best run of centers throughout the course of the last 30 years.
Yeah, they had Ralph Sampson, obviously, with Hakeem. Yao Ming, for more contemporary history. Moses Malone, before he got to the 76ers. Houston goes way back.
Don't forget Chuck Hayes.
Who can forget Chuck Hayes' broken
the Chuck Wagon.
Otis Thorpe is in there. How about that? At the four, I got Rudy Tomjanovic. 11 years with the Rockets as a player, 17.4 points, 8.1 rebounds, 5-time All-Star. Could have probably played a lot longer if he hadn't actually gotten into a fight during his time. Basically, who was it that punched him in the face?
Kermit Washington, I believe.
Yes, Kermit Washington. In 77, just like socked him right in the face.
Have you seen video of that? It's disgusting. Like, he blindsided him. He almost died.
Oh, I've only heard about the stories. I've never actually watched a video.
Ugh, don't.
But yeah, it was legitimate, like, life-threatening head injuries. And thankfully, he made a full recovery, was able to, I think he played in, like, the All-Star game or something that year. Kind of like
I don't think he came back that year. He was gone for, like, a little while.
Or the next year, maybe?
Possibly, yeah.
He was out for a while, yeah.
I mean, without seeing either one of these guys playing, I will argue that Elvin Hayes should be number one because he averaged 21 points and 12 rebounds over 7 seasons and only missed 2 games. But again, that's out without seeing him play, so, you know.
Yeah. I like Rudy's story more.
Yeah.
Because Rudy ended up coaching the team for a while, too. When they won. How about that?
You know, before doing research, bang, bang. Like thinking back over the course of the last 30 years, the only power forward for the Rockets that I could think of was Robert Horry. Yeah. Like, he was really good for those like Olajuwon teams. He was he wasn't like quite the level of Scottie Pippen, obviously, but he was like poor man's Pippen back then.
You couldn't think of Louis Scola?
He was great too. PJ Tucker.
Yeah.
Shout out.
True. At the three I got T-Mac.
Yep.
Obviously one of the best scorers of all time. We've all seen that clip of him hitting 13 points in 33 seconds, like multiple times. 22.7 points, 5.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists. Obviously, his career was also derailed by injuries. He had a constant back injury that he just could never kick. But T-Mac could have been one of the best, honestly. One of the best scorers of all time. Could have been one of the best if he wasn't always injured.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. At age 32 or 33, he was on the Spurs bench as they went to the finals and didn't play a minute in the finals.
Yeah. And that was after he played in China.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he had played for the Pistons, the Knicks, the Hawks, all after the Rockets because he just couldn't get a healthy back. It's a real shame what happened to the guy's career, man. T-Mac was a monster in his heyday.
Yeah, he was definitely one of the most talented players of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, too, we're mentioning a few players, like, not only on the Rockets, but there's a lot of players that there were mentioned as honorable mentions or they made the team, but we're always saying, like, what if, and it's a damn shame, but he's obviously one of the greatest Rockets.
Yeah. At the two, I put this guy in the right position this time, Clyde Drexler. He was traded to the Rockets in 95, just in time to rejoin his college teammate, Hakeem. They both went to the University of Houston. Won the championship with them in 95, played four more years with the team. He was there when Barkley and Pippen came around and they had, like, you know, that team of old guys, basically. But otherwise, like, 19 points, 6.1 rebounds, 5.5 assists. Again, just like an all-around jack-of-all-trades kind of player. Just one of those guys, man. The two-guard in position in the 90s was just insane. Like, every team, every good team had to have a good two-guard.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
It's today's point guard position.
Yeah. And then rounding it out at the point guard, I hate to say it, but James Harden.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. 29.6 points per game, 6 rebounds, 7.7 assists per game. This dude has revolutionized the game in so many ways. Like, we can't even count.
So many bad ways.
All his travels are legit. His step back. The step back is actually really nice.
No, it's not. Let's be real. His step back is four steps.
Sometimes it's three. You know, give it to him that.
And his foul hunting.
Yeah. But he still revolutionized the position. And he is the point guard for this team. No matter what you say. So, James Harden at the one. And then special shout-outs. We already did a couple. Ralph Sampson, Otis Thorpe, Chris Paul. That's for you, Josh. Vernon Maxwell, the guy who would fight anybody on the drop of a dime. Steve Francis and Katino Mobley, guys that we all grew up watching. And Calvin Murphy. Bang. Houston Rockets.
Don't forget NBA great Kenny Smith as well.
No. I'm good. I'd rather have Sam Cassell than Kenny Smith.
Me too.
Sam Cassell had big balls, invented that dance with the Houston Rockets. What did Kenny Smith do?
Yeah, Sam Cassell, maybe one of the greatest clutch players of all time. Not even joking.
Up there with Robert Horry.
Yeah, honestly. He's probably the point guard. He's probably the clutchest point guard of all time.
More than Derek Fisher?
Yes. I mean, Fisher hit, like, you know, some crazy shots in bigger spots. But I think overall, like, Cassell had a ton of game winners.
And Cassell didn't need to ride Kobe's coattails.
Yes.
All right, that's it. Got through six teams, guys. How do you feel? Anyone that we missed? Anyone that should have been given more respect on our list?
Not that I can think of. I mean, we're probably not giving enough respect to the guys from the 70s and 80s, but, you know, obviously we didn't really watch them either, so it's hard to really compare them to today's players, which they seem to love to do and just crap on today's game. I mean, most of those guys do anyway.
Yeah, other than Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah. I mean, remember during Steph Curry's run, they would always interview Oscar Robertson, and he would just totally just shit on Steph every single chance he could get, because Steph was breaking a ton of records.
Yeah, and then when Russ broke his records, he was like, oh my god, Russell Westbrook is amazing.
Yeah, triple doubles, woo!
Yeah.
Yeah, that's old people shit.
Talk about ruining the triple double stat. Way to go, Russ.
Wow. All right. I guess that's all the time we have now that you've slandered Russ on this podcast and Vince Carter.
Houston Rockets fans will hate us.
Yeah, I think most fans will hate us. Maybe the Raptors fans will hate you for talking trash about DeMar and Vince.
Yeah, they both suck.
Two of the most notable Raptors of all time, and they both get shat on.
Yeah, they're both trash.
Well, let's just, I just have one thing to clarify. So you both think that Vince Carter deserves to be the shooting guard for the all-time Raptors team?
Yep.
100%.
Okay. What do you think the Raptors fan base thinks?
DeMar.
Well, I mean, but it depends what age you are.
No, like overall, the general fan base. If you had a chance to like interview or poll all Raptors fans across the globe.
I think it would be 60-40 Vince.
I think it would be DeMar. But a lot of Raptors fans are young, right? You got to think that most of these fans just started watching basketball a few years ago because of DeMar bringing the Raptors to the playoffs.
Exactly.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that they understand history better.
Hopefully they didn't pattern their game after him. Ugh.
A lot of them would. That's the issue. right? But then you get a lot of guys, like, if you're going to take that approach, Raj, then you're going to see a lot of older players being overlooked.
Yeah, no, right? I'm not debating that Vince Carter doesn't deserve to be in the conversation. I just think Vince Carter was more known to Raptors fans, and his impact was both on and off the court. I'm not diminishing what he did on the court. He was still an excellent player. But I think what DeMar did on the court and his accomplishments on the court were, in my opinion, bigger for the Raptors and bigger impact, even though he never won the ship, neither did Vince. But he was there more often. He was carrying the team. He literally brought them from, like, oh, let's make the playoffs, maybe, to let's be a top seed in the East year in and year out.
For me, I just think that Vince Carter was a better player during his time versus DeRozan's time. I mean, DeRozan had a better team, and Vince just had a better overall impact on the Raptors organization throughout, you know, on the court and off. So with those two things, I just think that Vince was just better, period. But I do see your point, obviously. I think that Vince was definitely better than DeMar.
I'm going to put up a poll. Find it on Stretch4's Twitter feed. I want to see what Raptors fans actually think about this. That's a good question. But that is all the time that we have for this week's episode. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. Hit us on Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, Anchor, all the major podcast platforms. We're on Instagram and Twitter. You can find that poll there at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.